Hi, I'm your host, Melody. Welcome to the Arizona Area Sponsorship Workshop. This workshop is hosted by the Arizona Area of Al-Anon, and our intention is to make sponsorship more accessible and less mysterious to all Al-Anon members. Any sharings are solely the opinion of the member and not that of the Arizona Area or Al-Anon as a whole. We'll open with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Suggested Al-Anon preamble to the 12 steps. The Al-Anon family groups are a fellowship of relatives and friends of alcoholics who share their experience, strength, and hope in order to solve their common problems. We believe alcoholism is a family illness and that changed attitudes can aid recovery. Al-Anon is not allied with any sect, denomination, political entity, organization, or institution. It does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any cause. There are no dues for membership. Al-Anon is self-supporting through its own voluntary contributions. Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic. I've asked Elaine to read a portion of the bookmark, Sponsorship, Working Together to Recover, M78.
Sponsorship is a relationship built on equality, anonymity, and trust, an opportunity for growth for both the sponsee and the sponsor, a benefit at any stage of recovery, a commitment to practice healthy communication not based on intimidation or demands, an agreement to recover and grow together, not to struggle in isolation, an opportunity for self-discovery, not a teacher-pupil relationship, an experience based on unconditional love, not shame or judgment, a spiritual relationship with no strings attached, a one-to-one relationship, not an exclusive club, a bond focused on Al-Anon's four primary ideas: that we are powerless over the problem of alcoholism, we can turn our lives over to a power greater than ourselves, we need to change both our attitude and our actions, we keep Al-Anon's gifts by sharing them with others.
Thank you, Elaine. We will be exploring segment 6, panel shares and discussion on steps 8 and 9. We'll be looking at techniques for working these steps and literature used. We will now hear from our speakers. They are Debbie, CB, Jamie, Lisa, Kathy, and Nancy.
Hi, I'm Debbie, a grateful member of Al-Anon. I'll adjust to that in just a second, I think. On the topic of the 8th and the 9th step, as a sponsor and for myself, I think that my experience of sponsorship is hugely framed by my own personal experience of working these steps. So I'll talk a little bit about how I started working the steps. I was working with a group of people, I think, although this was really never openly discussed, that all of us were sponsored by one member of the group, and we all were wanting to work the steps, and she said, well, you know, would you be interested in doing it in a group? And so we launched into a very long project of working the steps. A lot of life happened in that process, and I was very impatient about that in the beginning, probably quite a bit into the process, thinking that we should be doing this faster and making more progress, and we were wasting a lot of time by talking a lot about what was going on in our personal lives before we would get to the step work. But what I discovered in that process was that it took a long time for me to build enough trust in the other people in the group, and my sponsor even, to be able to do a searching and fearless fourth step, which is, you know, for me and has been always a large basis of comes up then on the 8th step. And that was part of what was suggested to me, and it comes from Al-Anon material, I think partly from the Paths to Recovery, but I think it's referenced in other pieces of our literature, that we kind of use our fourth step as the launching point or the base for looking to what belongs on the eighth step. I chose to go back to some of the written material that I've saved from earlier eight steps, and a piece of advice for those of you who are new to working the steps. You might want to date things and number questions or reference where they came from, because many years later, you might not have a clue what you're looking at. But what I did find was my eighth step, and it was kind of surprising to me. Boy, was I angry, and boy, did I have a lot of people on my eighth step list, which all stemmed from the approach that in the group we decided to take, which was look at the person who'd been harmed, our relationship to the person, what my harmful act was, the reason for amends, and my willingness to do amends. When I looked at the person that was harmed in my particular situation, and this has pretty much been true the various experiences I've had working the eighth step, I start with my family of origin, the people I was closest to for most of my life, and then expand out to, you know, my relationships since then, my first marriage, my second marriage, my daughter. And it is the people that I've been closest to for the most part that that end up on the list. I found in looking back that I had a lot of work relationships on my eighth step list also. And in looking at the eighth step, you know, sometimes I seldom have any trouble describing what the harm was or what's the basis of the resentment that I have. But the challenge is to examine that thoroughly enough to be able to see how I have a character defect that's involved and what my responsibility is and what it is that I need to make amends for. And how that amends will look, of course, is going to come up in the ninth step. So, you know, I bring that experience into working with my sponsees, and generally I don't feel I have a rigid way of saying this is the way we eighth step. I've done it a couple of different ways, and you know, I have a preference. But my preference doesn't have to be a preference. We'll try to figure it out together to see what's working. And another thing that I, in preparing for this a little bit and giving it some thought, I realized is that I've sponsored a lot of people who sort of didn't complete the eighth step with me. And I was thinking back, you know, well, I remember doing a fifth step for her. I remember, you know, talking about the steps, and but I don't have a real recollection of working the eighth step with some of the people that I've sponsored. And I think that's, probably not surprising that I don't remember every detail of that. But also, I think that so much is revealed in the fourth and the fifth step when you're working with a sponsee, that sometimes these other parts, the other things that might be big to me personally, don't seem as big of a factor as being a sponsor. The other way that I've done the eighth step was is a different set of questions. I thought I could this from, but I can't with Melissa. I'm on this. But essentially, starting out with the idea of who hurt me, what they did, how it affected me, how did it damage my self-esteem, security, did it damage me financially or the personal relationship, and then going on from there to look at where had I been selfish or dishonest, self-seeking and afraid, where was I to blame. I think these both of these series of questions, you know, get to the same type of thing, to look at my behavior in relationships and where I'm responsible for damage that may have occurred to the relationship and what needs to be resolved. When I have gone from the eighth step to the ninth step, it's been helpful to have a sponsor and others, like in the group, who were able to point out things that I may have felt responsible for, but I really is not responsible for someone else's response or emotions or whatever. I took too much responsibility for in some relationships for what may have turned out to not be working in that relationship, and that sense of over-responsibility showed up there, and it was helpful for a sponsor to point out that that might be a factor. I also have had it, my sponsors generally have guided me to the way to make amends in terms of determining whether I'm going to make a verbal amends, I'm going to contact that person and talk with them, or whether I'm going to make what I've been told is referred to as a living amends, which means that I'm going to change my behavior and act differently in the relationship and try to do things in the relationship that can that may change things and that would make up for the wrong that I have done. So, and then when I'm talking with sponsees about that, I have also found that that it seems to be a common theme that people take responsibility for issues that come up in a relationship that it may not have been their responsibility, or they may have felt like someone reacted to something they said or did, that they were responsible for that reaction. And, you know, we're always responsible for our behavior, but we can't control that someone doesn't like things that we've done. The choices were for us to make, and that's something that I think often has to be examined. I wanted to quickly share with you a couple of ninth step experiences that I had that were pretty powerful. One is that I had some amends to make to my first husband, and at the point I was doing this was probably 20 years after the relationship was over, and I'd had only intermittent contact with him, and he was on my ninth step. I wasn't doing anything actively to try to find him or anything. And lo and behold, he just pops up in email, which he did every 5 or 6 years as a pattern, but, you know, he never knew when it was going to happen. And there was just a perfect opportunity to make some amends to him about the way that I behaved in the relationship. And it didn't, I did choose to do it by email. I don't remember. I think he was living in another state at the time. And I really didn't want to engage a lot into another relationship of any substance with him, but I did get a chance to make amends that way. The other thing that happened that was pretty wonderful was that I have a younger brother who I felt I was the boss of from his birth, and carried that well into adulthood. And we had a pretty contentious relationship growing up. And we hadn't really worked things out as to how we were going to behave as adults. We still were kind of stuck being 10 and 12. He went to some kind of a church-related weekend of self-exploration or something, and they asked for family members to send them a letter telling them what it was that you appreciated about the person and how they added to your world and your life, and just, you know, to give them praise and appreciation. And so I was able to send my brother this letter, you know, which was a form of amends for me to see him differently and to tell him how much I do appreciate him. The other thing I wanted to share was my first, I think it was not on my first ninth step, but I did have a ninth step where I had a financial amends that I was supposed to make. And I put it on my list, and I was willing to make it, but it wasn't until I had actually sent this person a check for the money that I felt I owed them and got back a response that I realized that even though I felt that I was willing to make the amends and I felt I had some responsibility, I really expected her to say, oh, no, this was you misunderstood, and so you were not at fault, and you didn't really owe me this. And that's not what the person said. But she did say, and I happened to find that I kept the note, and I didn't even realize I had, that she did say that she appreciated after a number of years that I had made the payment, and that she hadn't held it against me all those years, and she thought it was courageous of me to be doing the amends. And so, you know, those are things that when I'm working with a sponsee, it's helpful that I have my own experiences that can be somewhat reassuring about how things can get better and go well. I really can't say I've ever had anything that was a real strong negative reaction to an amends. I have had reactions that I thought were not dramatic enough for me. It didn't feel like, did they really get it? Because I didn't get an overwhelming response. You know, I think the program teaches me that, you know, as long as I'm working hard at keeping my side of the street clean and trying to be the best person I can be in the relationship, things get better. And that's, you know, a part of what doing the amends does for me, and I think does for other people who work the steps, is just help you to be a better person and to be better in the relationship. So I think that's really all I have. So I'm going to say thank you very much and let the next person educate us.
Thank you, Debbie, for sharing with us. I'm glad you're here tonight. So our next speaker is going to be CB, and she is joining us by telephone.
Hi, my name is CB, and hello to everyone. Boy, the sponsorship is such a gift. One of the pages say that it's as much a gift to us as what we can give to someone else, and that's really been true for me. One of the ways that in getting to know a newcomer and making them feel at home, it started for me when I did the literature commitment at a meeting. And at that literature commitment, that's where they would come over to the literature person for the newcomer's packet. And so I find that the newcomer's packet is so key in making someone know that, you know, letting them know they belong and that we're glad they're there. They also have on that same table a phone list. So it's real easy to take a phone list and say that these are members that you'll meet today in your meeting. And if you connect with what someone else says, feel free to give them a call. And by the way, this is me. I'll mark who I am. And just know that we don't give each other advice. We only speak from our experience, strength, and hope. And it's so nice to know that you're understood. And so that newcomer's packet, and we have a new one now that's not just the pamphlets all put together. That's really key to read that yourself and know what the newcomer might have questions about. And the sooner we can clear up, you know, that there's so much confusion and worry and not just hoping that they somehow can save their loved one. It's such a hard time to walk along. We get the opportunity to walk alongside someone through that very difficult time. And I refer to page 169, Encouraged to Change, as like a guideline for a sponsor and for own personal work through the steps. It says here that we learn to lean on a power greater than ourselves, and through faith and support by those that surround us, we discover that we can live and even grow through terribly difficult times. For most of us, the situation eventually alters, or we learn to find peace with it. So we get the privilege of walking alongside someone, and we all learn to lean on this power greater than ourselves, a part of myself that I'd forgotten about a long time ago by the time I entered the rooms. And another guiding page for me in sponsorship and just in my life now after, you know, the steps are making, you know, they change you. You are changed doing the steps. And on page 299 in One Day at a Time, there's a page that talks about Aesop's fable and how that the wind and the sun had a contest as to who could get the coat off the man first. And first the wind came along and just blew and blew and blew, and the man just got the coat up tighter around himself. But then the sun came out and warmed up the day, and the coat slipped away. And that's how it was for me in going through the steps, is that it's such a gentle process, and doing it with a sponsor who I absolutely knew, loved and cared for me, I was able to just let the preconceptions and the anxiety and fear slip away the more I did the steps. And so there are many ways to do the steps, and I'm continually hit them. We all hit them all the time. If you look at each of our daily readers, they have the 12 steps in order. So like in ODAT, if you start on page 167 and do the next 12 pages, each page is dedicated to one of the steps. And it's such a wonderful overview. And even if, you know, depending on the, if someone grasps this, many times our daily reader is something that someone will take out of the rooms with them. And they'll remember that. And then if you go over to the Courage to Change book, if you start on page 155, the next 12 pages are on the steps in order. And in Hope for Today, it starts on 164. And if you go back to the index in each of those daily readers, you would see where that, that you can just see the link of all the steps. And then I, you know, I have highlighted in each of them the steps in general, which pages really spoke to me and helped me in, with some words in explaining how it's happened in my life. And so like in ODAT on 175, we find out it's just a willingness in step 8. A nagging guilt arises coming through the steps once I really get a grasp of the disease of alcoholism and what my loved one is up against. And that it's not a moral choice. It's a disease. And then there's a host of my reactions and anxiety that many, many times made a situation worse. And then in step 9, page 176, it says that we have a change in our attitudes. And if anybody came up on my 4-step list that I felt that I that's where the amends came from, was those realization going through the first 7 steps. And that reconciliation could occur in those areas that I'd done damage. Encouraged to Change on page 162, it says that we have rewards of healing. We renew our relationships with other people. We face each day without the burden of guilt and be where I am today versus always just having to defend myself against something that's not real, because by that time I've come to a place of knowing my true self. And then on step 9, page 163, we have opportunities arise when we're ready. And from my list from 8, I was able to, you know, take those opportunities and to follow up on them. And in hope for the day, in step 8, our perceptions changed. We're willing and we to let the light and the understanding come in. I came in like an ice cube and you warmed me up and melted me. And then my leaves kind of unfold. It's not like we, it says like that one page about that many times it's like putting armor on to defend ourselves against a nuclear explosion. That's how it felt many, many times when I didn't know what to say or do. And that it wasn't necessary to defend myself. There was ways I could care for myself. And from step 8, I came to see that the ways that I softened my hardened heart, I was softened. And that I was able to heal. And then in step 9, and from hope for the day, page 172, there are many ways that I created new memories even. Because once the harm and the hurt was cared for, it opened up windows of light that I'd forgotten about. So there's all of our literature so great, whether it be Paths to Recovery or Reaching for Personal Freedom or just staying with the, oh, I love our pamphlet called 12 Steps. I have like this in my purse or my bag, whatever. There's two pieces of literature that have meant so much to me. The 12 Steps and Traditions, okay? And it's not, and in the 12 Steps and Traditions, it gives an overview of the steps. And then I absolutely have found invaluable and so easy to hand to a newcomer, the 3 Views of Al-Anon. And it's that letter from the alcoholic to his family helped me see many of the places that what I was doing was making a bad situation worse. And just reading this and letting the words speak for themselves made a difference in my life and make a difference in the, I can just see someone's weight lifted once they fully get an understanding. And this also, this 3 Views of Al-Anon, which is P15. It has such a nice summary of some of our key slogans, let go and let God, live and let live, think, first things first, and easy does it. And I just like to conclude with an example from my own life that was so remarkable for me. The CB in my name comes from my maiden name initials because when I was about 14 years old, I was adopted. And my first father, my real father, he suffered from the disease of alcoholism. And as I went through the 12 steps, I realized that it wasn't a moral choice. And that as an adult, there's no reason to live with the level of fear I had. You know, that I understood so much better. And my dad came back from World War II just like Bill W. That's the other thing that's been so helpful to me is whenever I read a piece of our literature, I'll look at the date and the copyright date. And I'll put down what my age was at that date, what my dad's age was, and what my mom's age was. And it gives me so much hope because we didn't have this level of recovery when my dad came back. And it was treated as a moral choice. And he drifted away from us, me with a new last name. And when I'd gotten into Al-Anon, it was before I'd worked the steps, and I was just so tied up in knots all the time. There had been a call come from my dad's side of the family, who we did not have any contact with. And it came to someone else in my family, but I let the word speak for me. And the question was, your dad is needing care. Would you be willing to help with his care? And in reality, he was dying. And the response was, hell no, he wasn't there for us. We're not going to be there for him. And as I went through these steps, I just saw that my assumption was that all good dads take care of their children. Well, my dad had a disease, and he did not, in fact, he scared us. And it was good that my mother took care of us. But at the same time, I wanted to make that right, because it would have been so easy for me to do something in helping with his care. And last I heard of him, he was living on the streets. And so when I was able to track down the phone number of an aunt, his sister, and I called her, and she was so glad to hear my voice. And she says, oh, my gosh, I'm so glad you called. She says, I don't know if you knew it, but your dad was a really bad alcoholic. And I said, yes, I know. And I said, that's the reason for my call. I'd heard that he died. His notice of his death had been left on my voicemail when I was sitting at work. Thought you'd want to know. He died. And I said, I'd like to make that right. I could have stepped up and helped. I am so sorry. First of all, thank you for taking care of my father. And what can I do to make that right? And her response was to me, she says, oh, no. I was able to find him a good place in a veteran's home. And he couldn't have been well cared for, any better well cared for. And I'm glad I was by his side. And she said, and you know what? When I left him that night, his last night I saw him, he was picking at his covers. I got to get out of here, got to get out of here. And I was leaving the room. He said, hey, sis, do you still have those 30 silver coins? And she said, oh, yes, Bill, I've got those for you in safekeeping. He says, good, those are for my three daughters, 10 each. There he somehow set aside 10 silver coins for me. 2, 10 for my sisters, 10 for my other sister. And she says, you know, I didn't know where to reach any of you. She says, so I donated them to the place who took such good care of your dad. What a gift. What a gift. To hear that from my aunt's voice. And to hear that he was understood and loved. She saw his disease and was able to still be there at his bedside. And it was just such a gift to me to know that he wasn't alone. He was well cared for. And that my aunt had found a way to make it happen. So this happens time and time again when someone goes through the steps, is that there's healing that occurs. And we are changed. So I'm ever so grateful, and I will turn it back over to the moderator. Thank you.
Thank you, TB.
You can't see us, but we all got thumbs up for you. Thanks for sharing with us.
Sure.
Okay, so next up is Jamie.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jamie, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I was sitting here thinking about how different each one of our 15 minutes are, and it's just really interesting how we all share our experience, strength, and hope in different ways. My home group is the Monday Night New Way of Life Al-Anon Family Group, and I also attend a step study once a week, which isn't meeting right now, and they're not Zooming either, but we do steps, traditions, and concepts, and I'm really grateful for that. I have a sponsor, I have a service sponsor, and I sponsor people. And in order for me to talk about steps 8 and 9, when I was thinking about this and trying to figure out what I was going to say and how I was going to share my experience, strength, and hope, I realized that the only way I could do it is by sharing a little bit of my story, because there were some significant things that happened early on that have to do with 8 and 9. I got married when I was 18 years old, and I had 3 children. They're all adults now, of course. And when I got to this program, they were all, my son was in diapers, and my 2 daughters were 5 and 8, and my son is 40 years old today, 41 years old. So that's how long I've been here. And when I got here, I was very rigid, very responsible, and very right. I looked like I had it all together, but inside, the disease of alcoholism had robbed me of my self-worth and my self-esteem. My life was really in shambles, and I really stopped believing that there was any way out. I just felt suffocated and, thought that this was my lot in life. Because I made my bed, I have to lay in it, as my father used to say. My kids felt like a noose around my neck, and, I was so preoccupied with my husband's drinking, where he was at, who he was with, what he was doing, how much money he was spending, that I was unaware that my 5-year-old daughter had lost 80% of her hearing in one of her ears. And a very aware kindergarten teacher called me to tell me about that. And, of course, my response to her was that there was nothing wrong with her hearing. She just wouldn't listen. And, of course, I got her hearing checked and had found out that she had lost 80% of her hearing. So by the time I attended my first meeting, my husband was working overseas, and I was very glad to be rid of him. You know, I felt like I shut the door of alcoholism, and he was out of the country. And but what I was doing was having an overlapping relationship with his best friend. These things are significant in working my steps. And my sponsor used to say, watch what you pray for, because you just might get it. And I got it. I got to marry him. And so watch what you pray for if anybody's out there hoping for something. And then my life got even more unmanageable. He was in AA and I was in Al-Anon, and I just thought, you know, that was the answer. So when I got to Al-Anon, right away I did get a sponsor. In those days, well, at least where I live now in Orange County, there's, you know, hundreds of meetings. But back then there were not a lot of meetings. And I picked a sponsor who had about 6 months more than me, and she was just a little bit ahead of me in working the steps. We also belonged to a group that was pretty there were, I don't want to say there were rules, because back then there were not rules, but there were certainly things that we followed. And when I would call my sponsor, she had 3 responses. The first one was, you need to work your 4th step. You need to start working your steps. You need to work your 4th step. Quit whining. The other thing she would say is, where's God in all this? Or she'd say, there's not a spot where God is not. So I had all these trite things that she used to say. After I divorced my second husband, which the marriage lasted less than 2 years, I stayed single for a long time. And I concentrated on raising my kids and going to meetings. And, you know, they would do things back then, like they would just say, get in the car. And it was in the day in L.A. and Orange County where you could get in the car and actually go to a meeting in L.A. from Orange County and not have to fight traffic. But so I got in the car a lot. And I was willing to follow direction, and I was willing to take contrary action. And contrary action for me was starting to work the steps. And so my journey with the 4th step started when I got here. I was here about 18 months before I really, started, my 4th step. My kids were, overseas with their dad for the summer, and I thought it was an opportune time for me to start doing that. I want to say that service has always been an integral part of my recovery, and it's never been an intrusion for me. And I do service because I feel like I have a debt of gratitude to give back to what has been given to me. And all the steps for me have been a spiritual experience. They've all helped me to see my higher power working, and that my higher power has always worked in my life. It's like I'm the one that left, but working the steps and starting, especially with the fourth step, I was really able to see that that my higher power was working in my life. I think for me, the steps are really a God thing. It's really my connection with my higher power, and hopefully it is for the women that I sponsor. It seems to be with some of the results that I see. So by the time I got to step eight, made a list of all people we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I just want to say, I want to go back and say that when I started in Al-Anon, there was no Al-Anon literature for working your fourth step. There was the small blueprint for progress, and I've just rediscovered that book. There's a large blueprint for progress, it's Spiral, and that came much later, but the smaller one actually was printed in 1976. But for some reason, that was not what we were following back then. And we actually used to go to West Covina. If anybody's from Southern California, you know where that is, from Orange County, because they were the ones that were working the steps. And so we would go there to learn how to work the steps. So when I started it, I did what back then we were doing was like an inventory of columns. It was a column one was resentments. Column two was, why did I have the resentment? Column three was, what was my part? And column four was, what did it affect? Did it affect my self-esteem? Did it affect my self-worth? My financial insecurity? That sort of thing. Today, thank God, there's lots of different literature to be working the fourth step. In fact, my favorite is Path to Recovery, simply because at the step study that I go to, and I've been going to for many years, we use that book, and I think it's pretty thorough, and I like that a lot. When women that I sponsor do their start their fourth step, I allow them the freedom to use whatever CAL that they want to. Whether it's the Blueprint for Progress or Reaching for Personal Freedom or the 12 and 12, and even How Al-Anon Works. There's the steps in How Al-Anon Works, but yet my favorite is Path to Recovery. I know that I can only give it away by the way it was given to me. And so for me, this step was about sorting out what was really mine. And like it's been said before, the names on my eighth step came from my four-step inventory, my first four-step inventory. And my sponsor kept reminding me that it didn't have to be perfect. And when you come from, my dad always used to say, if you're going to do it right or don't do it at all. Well, when you come from that, it makes you a perfectionist. So I thought there was like this perfect way that I had to do my fourth step. So the results of that fourth step really helps in furthering and of course, going into the eighth step. My sponsor told me to put myself at the top of the list. She told me it was about walking the talk. And it was about forgiving myself and moving forward. I had a lot of guilt and resentment, and mostly the guilt was about my children. And putting myself at the top and forgiving myself was, I think, the first thing that I needed to do in order to move on to the other names on the list. She also told me to make three lists. She said the first list should say, unwilling now. I'm unwilling now to make those amends. The second list was never. I am never going to make these amends. And the third list was I'm willing now to make those amends. So I was sponsor guided through that whole process. The first one that I wanted to talk about, the unwilling one and the unwilling never, was my first husband. who was by that time my ex-husband, and it was about my infidelity to him. And I really had to talk to my sponsor about this because he was not sober, and he's never found sobriety. And she reminded me that that because he wasn't sober, I couldn't trust that he wasn't going to use that against me in future if there were court appearances. And back then, that was a big deal. I mean, it probably wouldn't show up in court today, but back then it was important. And she was also concerned about what he might tell my small children because we were, you know, when he was in the country, we were co-parenting together. So, so that was one that I was unwilling to do, at that time. Now we couldn't, we didn't do well parenting together, although we tried. But today we're grandparents together, and we do a much better job grandparenting together than we did parenting. And you know, my sponsor explained to me that making amends means changing my behavior. It's not about apologizing. It's about changing my behavior. So with my ex-husband, it was about living amends for me. It was about treating him with kindness. It was about not sparring with him over every little thing. It was about not putting him down in front of the children. It was about not taking his inventory on a regular basis to friends. And so that's what that was for me. And without skipping to step 9, I will tell you that I have never made direct amends to him in that area. I have continued to make living amends to him. We were, even at Easter time, we were all on a family Zoom call, and he was part of that call. So he's part of the family unit, and I think that's a healing for me. He has a hard time with me, maybe because he's still drinking, I don't know, but we can't spend, I find that if we spend lots of time together, he gets a little short with me, and I have to be real careful and work my program. So truly, becoming willing for me was about my higher power guiding me and having the opportunity arise for me. My sponsor said in the column where I'm unwilling now that I was to pray about it because she said prayer brings willingness, and that is the same. You know, I can't give to my sponsees what wasn't given to me, so I can only give them what was given to me, and so. What I'm saying to you tonight is exactly what I would say to the women that I sponsor. I was told to pray for the willingness to be willing and to meditate and write. And both of those things, writing and meditating and the third thing, praying, really helps my willingness to develop in this area of becoming willing. And one of the things that I'll never forget that my sponsor told me, and I've got this written down in one of my books, but in my Path to Recovery book, she told me that forgiving others was not so much that they deserve forgiveness, but because I deserve peace. And so it's about forgiving and being forgiven. And I love that it's not so much that they deserve forgiveness, and a lot of times they do, but it's about that I deserve peace. So when I moved on to step 9, this step is, you know, made direct amends whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. To me, this was the action step. Because once I declared my willingness to make amends, there's no reason to delay, right? And I think step 9 is the second half of step 8. So, I prayed for the strength and direction to do the right thing when making my amends. And I heard in a meeting that apologizing means me trying to fix the situation. So I was told to ask the person, my sponsor said, ask the person, will you forgive me? And I never forgot that. And I passed that on to my sponsees because that to me is more of an action than I'm sorry. It's will you forgive me? And from working this step, I'm granted freedom. In making amends, I'm concerned with only my side of the street. So I worked with my sponsor on the one person who I was unwilling, in the unwilling column, who I said before was my ex-husband, and that's only come by living amends. Now, I'm over here where I wrote that, you know, she said, you don't want to open old wounds. He's an active alcoholic. You have small children. And the only reason for not making direct amends is that it would injure someone else. And it would. And that's the other part of that step, except when to do so would injure them or others. So my daughter that had the 80% hearing, that was very, very hard for me to make those amends to her. She was a teenager at the time when I made those amends to her, and I had to make amends to all of my children because I was an inconsistent mother. I used to call myself a custodial mother because I neglected them emotionally. I was always unavailable emotionally for them. I was there. I did their laundry. I was a good cook. The house was clean. I went to work. I put food on the table, but I was never there. My mind was a million miles away. So I had a lot of missed opportunities with my children. And the way I make living amends today to them is that I don't have any missed opportunities with them. I am the best mom, wife, grandmother, friend that I can be on a daily basis. And I have the best opportunity. I mean, I have the best relationship with my kids. And the last amends that I want to tell you about is that I made an amends to my mother. My mother passed away in 1997, and it was interesting. I'd been in this program quite a while when my mother was very, very ill, and I had made my amends to her many years earlier, and she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and she was dying, and we had 6 weeks. She found out she had cancer, and she lived for 6 weeks. And when she was dying, I could not stop telling her about how sorry I was for the daughter that I neglected to be so many times. For some reason, I needed her assurance that I was forgiven. I didn't want her to die I wanted her to die knowing that I loved her, and knowing that I forgave her. And at some point she said, I'll never forget this. She said, Jamie, you can stop making amends to me. This has been over for years. But there was something in that. I don't know what that was all about. And, it was just what happened and what it was like. So for today with my sponsees, I give them what's been given to me. And like I heard tonight, I don't always get sponsees that get to step 8 or 9. They certainly get through 4 and 5 and maybe 6 and 7, but some of them haven't gotten to 8. And we have never done steps together as a group with the women that I sponsor, but we do the traditions together, and we do a Zoom meeting on traditions, and we've been doing that for a while. So I'm just grateful for the opportunity tonight, and in working any of these steps, which I've gone back to do some of the steps. It's a ever-living opportunity for me, and I'm always promised freedom, growth, and happiness, and that's what happens when I work the steps. So thank you very much for letting me share.
Thank you, Jamie. Thanks for being here. That was awesome.
I'm Lisa, and I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. I'm in Mesa, Arizona. Step 8, I'm going to go ahead and start by reading the step, and then I'll go through how I've worked it with my sponsor. I made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. When thinking back to when I first worked this step, I remember one of the key words that my sponsor told me, both sponsors, I've had two over the course of 15 years, is the word willingness in this step. My sponsor always assured me that the step was only asking me to be ready, to have the courage that I had already gained through working steps 1 through 7, to be able to open my heart and my mind to make the list of the people I had harmed. it wasn't asking me to take any other action at this point. So I was always assured of that, and I'm grateful for that. I like to think of this step personally, and when I worked it with sponsees, as the pause or the deep breath. It's kind of like your inhale. You take that deep breath before you exhale, right? It's the process of kind of getting ready to free yourself of your guilt, but it's not like it happens immediately. It's like a process and a step. So it's kind of your step back, your pause. But this understanding of the step only came to me after working it with my sponsor. The very first time I worked the step, unfortunately, I worked it with somebody, and it was through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is not, I don't know, but controversial. I won't talk about that. With my second sponsor, I worked it two times. And the first time I worked it, I went through the Blueprint for Progress. And that was really key and vital to my recovery. The key thing, I think, with the Blueprint of Progress was the character traits list, looking through this and examining this as I was making my list, and I'll show you how I use that. What I did first was she asked me to make a list. Well, the very first thing she did was she advised me to bring God into the room, which we always did when we would meet as sponsee and sponsor. And she asked me to ask God to guide my pen, and that's what I did. And then I proceeded to make my list, and I kind of drew it out here. In the first column, I put the names of the people that came to mind. And, of course, some of them were, like, gut-wrenching and obvious, and you couldn't run from them, people. And other ones, they were a little harder to come through, and I had to work on some stuff with her to get some of those names on the list. But character. Then I listed my character defect, and I would put things like jealousy, envious, judgmental, whatever, you know, came off of the list that I had. I would kind of label the character defects. Sometimes it was multiple. And then maybe I, for myself, I jotted down like a little one-line abbreviation of what I did. And then that was just because I that's the way I am. But I was willing to make amends here. I would either put a Y for yes, no, or two N's meant never, never. I would never, never apologize for what I did. And then here, this is kind of step nine, but the second time I worked through this, I had a how, and because sometimes when I would write it out and think about it, I would reflect on maybe the way I could make an amends. And that came later. This wasn't really the first time I did this step. And like, for example, I'd put the person's name and I'd put, I was jealous or envious. And then what did I do? I did not attend their baby shower because they were having a baby and I wasn't. I ignored the baby. And then my willingness to make amends was yes, and then I ended up doing that one face-to-face, and I volunteered in Al-Anon by babysitting. That was, and that's step nine, of course. I'm jumping ahead. But that's how I made my list. The second time through the steps, I did paths, or the third time, the path through recovery. We read, me and my sponsor would get together and read through the chapter, and then I would answer all of the questions. So once I made my list, I would review it with my sponsor. We'd go through the items. And during the process, I really learned a lot about my behavior. I tended to see that I was kind of that all or nothing person. So either like everything was my fault or I was the victim, you know, and it was kind of a pattern in my behavior that I began to see on the list. And my sponsor was so kind and gentle, and she, basically, in a roundabout way, as it says in the book, is like kind of helped me to see my distorted sense of reality and my distorted sense of myself, that I wasn't the center of everything, and helped me to kind of weed through the stuff on my list. I think the biggest thing where I began to see growth on this step that I hadn't seen before was when she asked me to add myself to my list. That was key, and that was critical to my recovery. I think until I put myself on the list, I didn't see how I had really harmed people mentally, physically, spiritually. I started to be able to see that within myself and to see how it kind of translated into other relationships. And the benefit from doing that was like I grew some self-love. I actually grew in my self-care, and it helped my healing process, but it also helped me to really work through each one of those things on the list with my sponsor. As we went through, and some of the people on the list, it got harder to might talk about, or I didn't want to, I'm never going to make an amends to the person. We looked at the questions in the 12 and 12, which you guys may have. And on page 49, it's, what did I do to hurt this person? Like, so I was having trouble really seeing my part in it, and I was focusing on what they did. It's like, what did I do? What was my actual part in it? What were the consequences to my behavior? What I did, how did it result in something that maybe wasn't favorable? And then, was there any permanent damage? And those are the things that we talked about once I made my list. The more I did this, it became easier and less scary to look at it. Plus, I really learned, I think in the process of step eight, what I really learned was the example from my sponsor of how she was very gentle and compassionate with me working through this step. And I think that modeling helped me in turn to work with others. I would want to show that to someone else, you know, that patience, the unconditional love of my sponsor. She wasn't judging me about my list. And I'm just ever so grateful for that, for having that safety and being able to bring those things that I've done or to talk about those relationships or those things into the daylight, you know, so that I could really begin the process of healing. It's almost for me at the end of step eight, I felt like, kind of like I said, like it was the inhale and I could kind of take a breath. And I wasn't quite to step nine yet, but I think approaching step nine, I really understand this program better and I understand the beauty of the progression of the steps, because without the pause and the kind of the inhale, I can't exhale. I can't take an action that's best to serve myself or to amend for what I did unless I actually reflect and think about it. And so I think that's the beauty of that step. Also, I could go forward into step nine. I wasn't quite relieved of the guilt yet because I still had to take the action and make the amends and make those decisions how to make those amends. But there was like less shame after going through the process. And it took a very long time. I mean, it wasn't like I just did this and sat down. It was like I did some writing on it and then would meet with her and go over a couple. We just go over like one or two on the list. And sometimes we'd eliminate people. Sometimes I would think of someone else that was involved in it, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that person. And so it was a process, a long process to get through step eight. But in the course of that, the healing, like taking away what we talked about, and then I would bring it back to myself and, you know, more of that self-care and kind of letting it go with myself. And I think that's the beauty of step eight. And I understand it a lot better now. I understand it as a pause, as a reflection moment to really look at that list and look at ourselves before we go to step nine. So with that, I will pass.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you for sharing with us today. So next will be Kathy.
Great. Hi, I'm Kathy. Grateful Al-Anon from Portland, Oregon, actually Milwaukee, it's a suburb, and just needed to say thank you to Claudia and to Melanie and to the Arizona area for doing this. It's pretty awesome. And sponsorship is such a vital part of my program. To see it on a platform like this is amazing. So congratulations, Arizona, and welcome to you, those of you who are in the workshop. I kind of wrote stuff down so that I wouldn't forget things. So I wanted you to know a little bit about me. I'm 69. I'm the daughter of an alcoholic, Army Master Sergeant. We moved every 3 years. I married an alcoholic at 18. I had to get out of the house. And the final crisis happened about 6 years after we got married. And I joined Al-Anon on December 26, 1974 at the age of 24. And I've had the pleasure of having three sponsors. I use their name because it's easier for you to kind of see where I'm at in my recovery. So Ruth and Marilyn and Judy have been sponsors for me. Judy's still my sponsor now since I moved to Oregon. And all of them have kind of walked beside me as I did my path in Al-Anon. I can't share my successes without sharing my failures. And so my worst failure with step nine was that I decided I would make amends to my mom first. I hadn't talked to my sponsor about it, so that tells you that it's going to fail to begin with, right? My husband and I were going to have dinner with my parents, and so I volunteered to drive my mom, and Bob had my dad in his and our car. I drove my dad's car, and so I had my mom in the car for 15 minutes. That tells you it's not going to be good to begin with, right? And as we drove to the restaurant, I got to tell her all the things that she did wrong and that I forgave her. That tells you that's wrong, too. And there was silence. And when we arrived at the restaurant, before getting out of the car, my mom said with all the grace and dignity in the world that I've ever seen, she says, "I love my daughter and I love my three children." And I felt this big. And I couldn't wait for dinner to be over and my parents to be gone and to get home to call my sponsor and said, "Oh my God, how did I manage this?" As a result, my mom didn't always talk to me at any length when I called. But I did listen to my sponsor. She did say, "We need to do some more recovery work here." And that's what I started doing, working on my defects of character, so that the next time I tried to make amends, they would be real. And my sponsor said that I needed to try to do living amends since talking about them directly wasn't working for me at the time. and so what I did was, in trying to be a better me, I started calling my parents every Sunday evening. Because of the episode with my mom was always the one who answered the phone. So she answered the phone and she handed the phone to my dad. My dad talked to me for about a half an hour, telling me everything that had happened the whole week long, handed the phone back to my mom, and she said goodbye. And as my heart softened and as I grew, my mom started trusting me more. And so she would talk to me for a few minutes and then hand the phone to my dad and then back and maybe talk to me for a little longer. And as I grew even more, she talked to me even more. And that was a really special time. When I did my in-depth step 5, my sponsor said that I needed to take notes. And so I left that evening with a list of character defects and also a beginning list for my step 8. It would have been really difficult for me to make amends to my childhood friends because my dad was in the Army and we were moving all the time. So I knew that my initial list had my first husband and my parents and my two brothers. And I knew that by my sponsor saying to make living amends that my heart was already softening to them. Another episode that I had was with another sponsor, Marilyn, and she pointed out that it really looked like I was continuing to judge and condemn myself and the parts inside of me, that the little girl and the teenager. When we talked about it, we figured out, like I heard a few minutes ago, that I wasn't on the amends list, and I needed to be on the amends list. Marilyn had always been pretty gentle and kind with me, but this time she was really firm and really direct and said, "Kathy, who made you God? If your God wants you to be happy, joyous, and free, and forgave you all those years ago, if I'm condemning the child and the teenager, then who am I, who do I think I am that I still get to condemn myself?" And she said that I'm not God, and it's time for me to knock it off. I really had to listen to that. I really had to pay attention. And Marilyn knew that the basis of my program has always been the Serenity Prayer. And what she said was, maybe we need to make it a little longer. And so for me, it became, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. I can't change my past. It's over and done with. I need to forgive myself. God, please help me forgive myself. And the courage, God, please grant me the courage to change the things I can. Help me to love and protect the little girl and the teenager. Help me to listen to their needs and to change my attitude towards them. Please help me forgive me and to remember that you want me to be happy, joyous, and free. And God, please grant me the wisdom to know the difference between the things I can change, which is me, and the things that are none of my business. I still say this prayer. I still say all of those things. And as you know, I've learned a whole lot more since then. And so the prayer's gotten longer because I want to remember my lessons and I get to say them when I'm saying my serenity prayer. Another episode was when my sponsor came with me to my Friday night Al-Anon adult children meeting. And the speaker at the time that night said that he wrote a list of attributes that he had gained from his parents. And I had never thought of gaining attributes from my parents. I knew all of the defects I got from my parents, but talents, gifts. And Marilyn knew that I was struggling with my parents, and so she suggested that I go home and try making these two lists, one for my dad and one for my mom. I am good at following directions, so after I got home, I sat down and I wrote the first list, and it was for my dad, the alcoholic. And in just minutes, I had a list, and it was accurate, and it fit. It was like the puzzle piece and going into my stomach and fitting. And I knew that a burden was lifted from my shoulders, and I felt more love and compassion for my dad that day than I ever had. And I really looked forward to that phone call that coming Sunday. You know that I went and tried to do the next list for my mom, and that page was blank. Well, given the trouble I had earlier that I told you about, that's probably not a surprise. I'm still following directions, so I tried again the next day and the next day, and it was still blank. So I got to talk to Marilyn again, my sponsor, and she suggested that I write the serenity prayer at the top of the page. And so I did. She knew that if I wrote the serenity prayer, my pen would keep writing. And it did. I had a list finally of attributes that I had received from my mom. And I knew that I loved her. And I knew why I loved her. And as a result, phone calls started getting even longer. A while after that, I was at a conference, and after the conference, Marilyn and I talked, and my mom was in the hospital nearby, having minor eye surgery, and I was able to go visit her, and sit down beside her and tell her, how grateful I was that she was my mom, and, share with her what I had discovered, about both of us and the gifts that she had given me. And after that, the trust was built and was solid. And just to let you know, she got to come and live with us, and spent the last 12 years with us. So it was very, very special. The next thing I wanted to share with you about was, when I tried to, about the person who was in the never column. I was one of those who used that column method that Lisa described, and, my husband at the time, I was in the process of divorcing him, Bob, was in the never make amends to a column. And our life had just gone in different directions and it was over. And I knew that I had a part in the failure of the marriage, but I still really felt like a victim. I'm a person who likes to read my daily readers in the morning. I had an outside book, piece of literature, and I read it, and the page talked about omission. And that was my part in the marriage. I was so afraid of his anger and the violence that occurred during the drinking years that I didn't trust Bob. And so as a result, I didn't share my life with him. And that's omission. So I found my part in the failure. I called Marilyn, and we talked about it, and realized that Bob moved from being in the never column to being a person that I could make amends to. We needed to get the taxes done. He needed to deliver all the paperwork so I could get it down to the CPA. And I was able to sit down with him with that book and ask him to read the page and share with him how I hadn't shared with him all those years. And he was able to accept the amends and part, and we parted as friends. My sponsor, Marilyn, formed a study group using the book Path to Recovery. It was soon after it had been published. We went through the different concepts with the group of people and learned about the principles, you know, like mutual respect and listening and leadership. You've had discussions about that, I'm sure, with your sponsor. It was really interesting also to talk about how it applied to our lives, and we kind of rewrote the concepts as it would apply to a family life. It was fun adapting them to my situation. And it also helped me with my Al-Anon service positions. I had a new husband by this point, Mike, and with the children. And it helped me at work, and it helped me with my parents. I used to see my sponsor every week because my husband would be taking his kids back to their mother. There we go. And that gave me time to spend quality time with my sponsor and work on whatever we needed to at that time. And it seemed like I was always complaining about what was happening with Ryan, my stepson. And Marilyn said that complaining was just not going to work, that I needed to change what was happening for me. And one of the ways that I could do that was to think of Ryan as an alcoholic. She recommended that I get one of the leaflets that we have called Detachment. Mine is still in my God box, so I don't have it right here to hold up for you. And she said that I was to edit the pamphlet and put Ryan's name in all the he, they, and whatever places, and to make the examples that were in that particular pamphlet reflect what Ryan did as opposed to what was there. And that helped me let go of my anger and resentment towards Ryan, and I was required, again, Marilyn could be firm and direct, to read that before I walked in the house. That way, if the chores weren't done, or if this wasn't done, or if he wasn't even there, I didn't have to lose my serenity. And just to let you know, Ryan has 20 years of sobriety now, so he was the alcoholic. The next thing I wanted to share was about what happened after my dad passed. As a result of the different positions that I had in service in Al-Anon, and because I'd been able to make the amends to my parents, they trusted me to be the executor of their estate. To me, this is step 9 in action. 2 years after my dad died, my mom called and said, "I understand why the elderly commit suicide." Well, that's bells go off, right? And I was able to say, "Mom, it's now the time for you to move in with us." So we didn't really find homes in the Bay Area. We decided that we would move to Portland, Oregon, because that's where my mom's great-grandchildren were. My brother lived up here with his children, and they were having children. Marilyn drove me up here because my arms were really weak because I did data entry, and they just couldn't drive that far from the Bay Area to Portland. And Marilyn turned me over to my new sponsor. We saw one another in the store. They were both delegates and raced to one another. And Judy said, "Wednesday night, be there. That's when the best meeting in Oregon is. Aren't you supposed to think that your meeting is the best meeting?" Well, hers is the best meeting. It's my meeting, and my home group still, and hers too. She sat down and said, "So, what would you like to work on?" And at the time, I just thought I wanted a sponsor and name it. And the more we talked about it, I had done an in-depth study on the steps. I'd done an in-depth study of the concepts. I'd worked them a couple of different times, and I'd never really studied the traditions to any great degree. So she pulled together 3 of her longtime closest Al-Anon friends, and we set up a biweekly meeting to study the traditions. And since I've been up here 18 years now, we've also gone through the concepts and the steps. And when Reaching for Personal Freedom came out, we, at the Vancouver Al-Anon International, we were able to use that for other studies. For me, because I became the executor for my mom and dad, and then my dad passed, I got to administer the estates for both. I had a strong group of friends that were able to support me through those deaths and through the administration of those things, and decide how to handle taxes, how to handle insurance, how to handle bills, how to handle doctors. I couldn't have done those things if I hadn't had you walking beside me. And I learned that I could hire a CPA. I could hire a lawyer. I could hire a painter. So I guess for me, I love it when I hear people say Al-Anon is a we program. So I get to say it to you here too. I don't have to ever do this thing alone. And you helped me find my higher power. You helped me find my sponsors. You've helped me find my people. And you're here, and you're here today. So I'm forever grateful, and I just wanted to say thank you for inviting me today.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here and for sharing with us today. Nancy, please unmute yourself.
I want to tell you thank you so much. My name is Nancy, and I've been a grateful member of the Worldwide Fellowship of Al-Anon since August 13, 1976. I want to thank you, Claudia, and the committee for asking me to do this segment of workshops on sponsorship. What a wonderful opportunity. When I first came into Al-Anon, there was not a lot of literature. But what there was, I used to the fullest. My first sponsor, an amazing person full of love and laughter, just kind of started working with me on the steps. I don't remember actually making a commitment to work the steps. We just started working them, and I was ready to trail along. I would write on everything that I could read on the step we were working on, and then we would meet once a week and talk about it. Usually, I was reading out of One Day at a Time and Living with an Alcoholic. Those were my two books when I first came in. It was only later that I was able to use the 12 steps and 12 traditions, the 12 by 12, and the blueprint for progress. This morning I just looked up on my shelf of all my Al-Anon literature, and I found that it's a book only about this big. Now it's much bigger and has a lot more in it, but that book is crammed with so many 4 steps and papers, it's pretty fat. It isn't originally fat, but it's that fat. In our weekly meetings, he was my sponsor, I would read what I had written, ask her questions, and she'd just direct me gently to keep moving. There were some big rocks in my past I wasn't talking about when I came into Al-Anon. There were big rocks that I never told anyone, including my husband, about my being sexually abused by my dad and being raped when I was a freshman in college and having to give the baby up for adoption. So the day that we met for her to hear what I'd written on my fourth step, we were in a park, sitting on a park bench, and our children were all running around playing. And I held out my great big stack of paper I had written, and she suggested that I just start with what I had left out. She must have known me pretty well. So I did. I started with what I'd left out. It was those big rocks. I had written all my resentments. I had blamed and carried on with lots of stories that made me look like the princess and damsel in distress. But when she did that, it simplified everything down, and it was such a relief. I finally was able to say my big rocks to someone. But I knew the steps. And so after I was done, I said, and I am never going to make an amends to my dad. And my sponsor just smiled and said, Nancy, don't worry. You're not even on step 6 yet. But that put my fears to rest about what steps 8 and 9 would look like. I didn't need to look at that right then. I had things I had to do. Maybe I'm a slow learner, probably. Or maybe my higher power was taking exquisite care of me. Yes. But it was 9 years later that I finally was able to speak to my dad and actually make an amend. My amend was for my judgment of him and keeping him frozen in the past and hating the man that he was without ever giving him credit for growing spiritually, which he had. He had joined a church and been working very hard on that. It was even longer before I could apologize to my husband. But both experiences went so far beyond my wildest dreams that I was able at the end of his life to care for my dad as a child of God. And my husband and I will celebrate our 54th wedding anniversary this summer. So in God's time, not mine, everything worked. Yes, step eight is two things, and that's all it is. So simple. Willingness and the action of making a list. I could make the list, but the willingness was a slower coming. After I had success with some amends, like to my brothers, I could see that amends would work for me. I could slowly open to that. Now, step nine doesn't give a timeline. The only restriction is not to cause harm, and that includes me. And, yes, I agree with our other two speakers. I needed to be on the list, and all my sponsors I've had, have told me to make sure I'm on my list because my self-judgment is harsher than I would ever allow from someone else. But the important thing is, and this is one of the things that my sponsors all said, was to put God in charge every time. He would let me know when the time was right and when I was right. You know, on the other side, I have sponsored so many people through these steps. I've found that my only job is to share my experiences. They're spotty at best, but they're the only thing I have, my experiences. And to encourage and support my sponsees. I've observed that my sponsees, when they've done their eighth and ninth steps, have emerged on the other side of that experience with more self-esteem and more confidence, just as I experienced. What lovely gifts for hard work and courage. Sponsorship has been an opportunity for me to learn to make sense of my life, and through being sponsored and sponsoring others, I've learned responsibility that is not enabling. I've learned to gracefully listen when I really don't agree or understand. I've learned to love even the unlovable. Then I get to take those gifts home to practice where it's the hardest of all. When Claudia asked me to do this, I was asked to share techniques and literature. And, you know, my favorites have changed over the years. I rather bungled the blueprint for progress. I took it like a test that I had to pass and get an A on. Of course, I've done it other times. And it did turn into a useful tool, especially looking at my assets. I love paths to recovery, and in the chapter on the fourth step, there are at least 12 different ways to do that step, which really kind of demonstrates how there are so many options in our program. Reaching for Personal Freedom, the book Kathy referred to, is marvelous, and it's eye-opening. But the most important thing to me is to know how this program is open so we can pick the thing that we want to do that fits us, just like we get to define our own higher power. I love that. You know, my higher power today breaks rules and loves to dance and passes gas and does a lot of human things. It's so lovable. Perfection is not lovable, but my higher power is very lovable. The key, in my opinion, is willingness and honesty. And always when I see a sponsee struggling, I remember my own struggle and have compassion. That has that detachment of not having to fix. How lovely. Sponsors don't have that responsibility of fixing, just to listen and love. I have tried to sponsor like I've been sponsored, using the principles of the Al-Anon program. And I've mentioned a few, responsibility and honesty. And you'll find references to the principles above personalities all through Al-Anon literature. I know that my experience has shown me that the best sponsor-sponsee relationships include equality, respect, and trust. And where there's no dominance of one or the other, and it's a truly living expression of loving respect. I have had sponsees fall away. It's like they're not accessible anymore. They're not contacting me anymore. And I'm really not sure what happens there. And then I have sponsees bubble up and appear in my life, and there they are. Since all these Zoom meetings, I've been going to Zoom meetings all over the place. And there's a lady who's 90 years old. She is from Ireland, but she lives in this country now. And she had never worked the steps, and she's working the steps with me. Ooh, what a hoot. I'm loving it. So there's always a new adventure. And I appreciate you letting me be part of this adventure. That's all I have. I'm going to need some help to get to see your faces now.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you to our speakers for sharing. We will now close with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.